The good people at Manscaped have partnered with us here at the Beautifully Designed Game podcast with an exclusive offer just for you as a thank you for tuning in. Visit uk.manscaped.com, enter promo code TFT20 for 20% off your order. Believe me, your balls will thank you.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name is Marcus Marrett, and today I'm very happy to be bringing you a special edition of the podcast and speaking to three illustrators who you are all very well aware of. And so I will shortly hand over to each of them to introduce themselves. But today we will be talking about the field of sporting portraiture. And from that point, I will hand over to Phil. Introduce yourself, please, Phil.
Why is me first?
well, actually, Phil, if I may say so, you are the next screen along.
Oh, is that right?
So I am going next.
I'll take it. My name's Phil Galloway. I am an illustrator and artist, I suppose, as Marcus says. And I suppose out of this group, maybe specialise in a bit more realism style. I don't know if that... Is that right? I'm seeing some.
I always think of you as the fine artist of the.
My background is in kind of fine art and art history, master's degree and stuff like that. So I love anything to do with art history and try and let it influence my work.
Brilliant. And next, the man I have introduced on an earlier podcast as the Philip Lahm of football illustration. If it wasn't on a podcast, I think it might actually have been on a tweet in a reply to his work, now I think of it. Dave, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lahm. I'll go with Lahm. He was pretty decent, wasn't he? My name's Dave Flanagan, and I'm an illustrator, and I keep thinking what you sort of should describe yourself nowadays, but I'd imagine illustrating content creator. I think that's a good description nowadays. A little bit of an artist, I'll take some of Phil's thing. Not as good as Phil, but and that's basically, I work in the football world, creating content, and I've got very much of a design background. I worked as a graphic designer for about 20 years, so now I do this full time. But yeah, that's me.
Well, and we'll pick this up later, that for me, the Philip Lahm reference is in that you have such a range of art directions, Dave, and so your technical ability as an illustrator always seems to be so adaptable to the art direction that's right for the piece. And so whether you're at right back in the centre of midfield or probably either on the wing or at centre back as well, you're doing just as good a job for the team.
I'll take that.
And then on to the man himself, who on the screen I can see, and I know that isn't any use to people listening here on a podcast, but he has a very well decorated wall behind him and a wall dedicated to one particular club himself. Carl, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. All right, I'm Carl Fire, and I guess I'm a sports illustrator as well. I don't have a background. I've not studied or anything. I'm self-taught myself everything kind of over the years. Which it's been a bit of a tough road, but I'm to be sitting here and doing the podcast and sharing it with these two great people and yourself is amazing. And I specialize in, I guess it's this would be perfect for me. I like to do portraits, I like to do people's faces, so I guess that's, and in particular, as you guys all know, I'm it's quite a lot of Liverpool work I do. So.
Yes, well, I was going to ask you to give people an insight to what club it is that's represented so much on the wall behind you. And and that is Liverpool Football Club. Is that right?
It is indeed. Yeah, that's just been everything, and it's always been since I was a kid. So, and to even do artwork now with them is just, yeah, it's quality. I love it.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we will find out more on that particular subject in the very near future. And so we are here today to have a general discussion about the area of sporting portraiture. All of you are professional illustrators and have a portfolio with a heavy body of work for football clubs, football leagues, associations or organisations, and portraits have always, in my mind, since I've been involved in the field, been quite heavy at the forefront of the content that's created. And with the field of social media and the growth in the opportunity to create and share content, portraits have very much seemed to be at the forefront of the content that's created, and an illustration being the ideal discipline to deliver that. And so, Phil, can I start with yourself? You have quite, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, a classically trained and kind of in quotation marks, if that's what the right way to say it, a classically trained art background. Is that right?
Only to a point, really. I did art GCSE and art A-level. And then that was it. I decided to go to the university to actually study English originally, and found up in Aberdeen that I preferred my minor courses in art history. So in terms of the kind of classical...
So sorry to jump in. Does it happen that you just happen to be a very intelligent man who has a very good knowledge of art history and periods in art and different art disciplines, you then have the talent to produce it?
No, I think what happened was I've always drawn and doodled, and me and my brother, he's a very good artist as well, and we've always produced caricatures and portraits. And so, you know, I knew I wanted to, in an ideal world, I'd love to have gone and worked to, you know, in the art field when I was younger, and that's what I wanted to do. But I think I was quite ill during my A-level period, and so I had so much work to catch up in my second year that I thought I'll go to uni and do something different, and went to do English. And I realised I kept getting drawn back to art. And although at the time I couldn't, because I was switching my subject, I couldn't just switch to a fine art degree. So I thought I'll do the next best thing and I'll learn about the kind of the background of art history. It was always intrigued me. I'd always read up on it. So not only learning the kind of the process of how these artists achieved, you know, great things, and learning about the political side of things, what was happening in the world. And it was really interesting, and it kind of informed the way I drew and painted as well. And I specialised in Baroque art specifically, and moved to Florence for a year. And I think that kind of affected the way that my work looks now.
Sorry.
So there's a lot to unpack there.
Well, sorry. Can we just reverse?
I remember when I moved to Florence for a period.
Yeah, sorry.
I just slid that one in there.
Yeah. You absolutely did there. Can we, let's go back here. So you moved to Florence for a year. And can you talk us about this kind of daydream of a life that you lived for a year?
It was glamorous and cool, but it actually came from quite a negative thing. What I found was, I don't know whether you know the Scottish university system, it's a four-year course and you have to pick minor subjects to go with your major subjects. And quite often you'd get subjects that you couldn't do because they clashed, you know, timetable wise. Right. So I ended up doing stuff with my minor ones. I did astronomy, meteorology, astrology is one of my things. I wanted to do paleontology and I got told I couldn't. Yeah. And I was like,
sorry to jump in. Is that how it is in America? Is that how, when I hear of people?
It's a similar system, yeah.
Right, okay.
I think so. And so you have to kind of pick what fits. And some of it was doing like 14th century history, and it was awful. And so what I found was my major subject, which had switched now to art history, the grades were just starting to dip as I was trying to correct the other minor subjects. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't enjoying it at all. So in my second year, I spoke to my parents and they were dead supportive. And I just said, I need a break. I need to change it up. I need to kind of reinvigorate myself. And I'm losing passion with art history and I don't want to do that. So they said, well, what do you want to do? And I had a little look around and I found this school in Florence called the British Institute of Florence. And I applied and they accepted me. And I went and moved out there and studied art history amongst the sculpture and the paintings. And we had private access to like Michelangelo's David. And it was insane. And so I got to live out there about 2 minutes away from Florence's stadium, Fiorentina Stadium as well, which was wicked. And I came back just completely refreshed, determined to kind of smash my degree and get it done at least, and then I could get on with whatever I wanted to do. So that was that period.
Did you play even one game of five-a-side or seven-a-side football on some beautifully ornate stone picturesque
We had pitch? The dirtiest game of football I think I've ever played in, and I've played Sunday League a lot. Outside the Church of Santa Croce, there's a big, lovely square. It's so beautiful. And we were having a kickabout, and this big group of these kind of gorgeous-looking Italian boys who were way slicker than us came over with a group of girls, and they were showing off to them, and they challenged us to a game. And it was two-footed challenges on concrete all the way. It was filth, elbows. It was like, I don't know whether you know what's it called? It's the old-fashioned calcio that they do in Florence, where they basically the fans get together and fight each other in the different colours and medieval wear. It was like
but with getting the physical, the old traditional, very traditional game you're thinking of, the physical side of that is actually very much a part of it.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, it's wrestling as much as football, and it did spill over that. But you know, people were wearing Adidas Samba rather than Baroque wear or something. So,
but did you win? That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, we did. Well, we didn't do fun, but like a lot of the people who were on my course, there was a couple of Scots and a couple of Northerners, and but not all of them were great at football. And I mean, I'm saying I'm amazing and stuff, but I'm a defender. I like a meaty challenge, and so I was getting stuck in and kicking away and elbow. I mean, the nice thing was after it, we all went for a beer and we all had, you know, and they still wouldn't let us chat up the girls there or anything, but
oh really? Yeah.
Oh, they're really protective.
Yeah. Ah, oh, fair play. Carl, can you give us an insight to those who are maybe have had their head in the sands the past year or so and aren't aware of yourself? Could you give people a wee introduction to yourself and your work as an illustrator? And it would then be great to pick up on where portraits fit on your own creative practice.
Yeah, sure. So I'm on all the socials. So it's at Carl Fire on Twitter and.
Sorry, Carl. Can you spell your surname, please? Because as people, if people haven't heard already by the time they listen to this. My chat with Carl for Carl's individual podcast, I had a challenge in actually ever getting his surname correct. So, Carl, can you please actually spell your surname?
Yeah, sure. So it's Fyer, which is Thyer.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No worries. So I'm on all the socials that most people use, Twitter and Instagram. And I'm actually on Facebook, but the community is not that big for me on there. I create artwork, I like to illustrate footballers, and I create my, I've got an online store which I sell my prints and drinking mugs and all sorts of other football memorabilia through. And that's basically me full time, and I illustrate. And I've worked for a few different companies. I've done stuff for the Premier League and I did some for the ATP tennis. But it's kind of a lot of my artwork is more face on. So that's the kind of angle I like to just, you know, stand in a particular pose, straightforward facial, you know. And my artwork is, I like to if I could try, I like to, it's quite symmetrical, as symmetrical as possible. But over the years of looking at so many faces, I realized that people's faces are not symmetrical. And it, sometimes it can be quite a challenge to,
yeah,
to create a symmetrical face of somebody who is not symmetrical. So, but that's that, pretty much what I do.
Well, that's a really good insight that you've just given us. So is it a case that when you are approaching a new portrait of someone, do your eyes see creating that portrait through the process of splitting their facial features down the middle? So essentially considering how one side works and then thinking symmetrically and flipping that over. Is that kind of how your process works?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I do, when I don't, when I'm illustrating someone, I don't kind of do half and then sort of flip it. I do and I don't. So because there's certain things, like, so for example, if they've got quite long hair, the hair may not be symmetrical. So you can't always, it's not always as straightforward as sort of do half and then flip the other side. And also it depends on when the reference image I'm using, when I'm looking at their eyes, it depends on. So if you kind of do like a half, they may not be looking, their focus might be slightly to the right or slightly to the left. Yeah. And then when you kind of flip it, it makes the eyes look odd and things like that. So as much as symmetrical as possible. So the elements, so like whether it be the lips, the eyes, the nose, they're generally symmetrical, but the positioning of where you do it is not always symmetrical.
Yeah. I may have worded my question incorrectly, so poor language for me there, but it was more a case of, so when you're approaching a new portrait, do you think of looking at it as I do myself when it's a, well actually I myself tend to avoid doing front on portraits, but that's because of the style of the work that I do and how I like to then think of how light and shadow is used to create the kind of facial features. But it was more a case of, do you look at kind of, when you're looking face on, do you look at how left works against right? Because I do myself, I think I like to look at someone, split there and have an imaginary line down the middle and think of how maybe one side, you know, if they have a beard, maybe their beard happens to be slightly higher on one cheek on the side than the other. And I'll use those points of difference to then start to build up how that individual likeness works.
Yeah, absolutely. The aim for me is to make them look symmetrical. And so I kind of go in with that idea in mind. For example, they don't, like I said, they don't, not everybody looks much symmetrical. So for example, like you could make, let's say for example, Jurgen Klopp, right? You could make him look symmetrical. You could use the eyes and nose, but if you actually look at his smile, he's got, there's a slight angle to his smile. And then, so when you kind of, if you come in with the, everything else could be symmetrical, but when you get to the mouth part, you have to give that little bit of an angle. Otherwise, it doesn't look like him to a certain extent. It's really weird. And it's only like the small little things that might not be symmetrical, but they can make such a difference when you're kind of trying to put a face together.
Well, I'm looking at, I have a page of your Liverpool portraits up on one of the screens here. And there is your big beaming Jurgen Klopp smile. And it's that lower lip slightly to one side that is a very subtle, and actually it's funny that as you were talking I was looking at it, and it's probably your words that drew my eyes to it, but it's that subtle wee element that you can add to what others might look like is quite symmetrical work, but it's those subtle wee differences that give essentially that illustrative work that extra levels of quality, I think.
Absolutely agree.
Dave, jumping over to your good self, so actually just letting people know that are listening across the four of us, we have both sides of Manchester represented when it comes to the teams we support, and we have two people representing the red part of, am I right in saying the red part of Merseyside? Because is Tranmere in Merseyside? Am I right in thinking that? Yeah.
It is.
Okay. Yeah, because you can't, you shouldn't be really ever say. Sorry?
There'll be a few complaints if we've got that pear shape, though.
No, it is definitely.
So you can't ever say the red half of Merseyside because there is more than the, you know, the blue and the red. Yeah. Anyway, just letting people know that we have a heavy Manchester Liverpool heavy skew when it comes to football voices on here. If that seems like the references we're making are quite focused. Dave, a big wave to yourself right now. Dave, could you just let people know right now where they can find you online so they can maybe be doing so while we're speaking right now?
I'd go to my website, which is www.daveflanagan.co.uk.
Yes.
It just gives you, because I suppose if you go down my social media feeds, I sort of changed a lot of things that I do, so you won't get a proper idea until you scroll to like a year ago. So yeah, my website's probably the best place to go, I'd say.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Dave, and picking you up on a field of your work that I've always enjoyed following your work closely, and it's the kind of and it's the experimentation with different styles and looking at the homepage of your website right now, the style experiment, whole field you've been doing, and this great kind of expressive and bold figurative work that I've been seeing a lot of, especially around the Euros. Can you talk us through how, when you're considering what is essentially a portrait, but a non-facial based portrait, so when you're considering an individual's either body shape or a certain signature move or pose that they're known for, how do you approach that kind of a portrait as opposed to, you know, a purely facial, maybe shoulders front on standard portrait piece of work?
I was thinking about it when you sent the sort of the topic through about portraiture, yeah. And that's exactly it. I think when I first started, I worked as a graphic designer for a long time, and I sort of got into Illustrator more and more, and then realised by looking at certain artworks I'd seen, like Head Candy albums and stuff like that, that you could start creating illustrations in Illustrator, and that just set me off. And I used to go home and just think, well, what can I create? You know, and I used to do all sorts of things. And my sort of football portraiture stuff started with, I did a portrait of David Silva just because I just sat there and thought, what am I interested in? I did that. And I put that on Flickr, which I've said many times before, which no one will know what Flickr is anymore, but I put it on Flickr. And then I literally, a few weeks later, I got an email from an agency in Manchester, a big agency, just saying, we love it. Can you illustrate the whole squad for Man City? And I just couldn't believe it. I didn't even know that was a thing that could happen. And it's quite similar to, nowhere near as good as Carl's work, but it was face on illustrations. Again, not like Carl's. Mine were probably a bit more cartoony, but and it was that style. And to then do the whole squad, I learned so much, because like Carl will tell you, you do one, you know, you do Virgil van Dijk, great, because he looks like that. He's got a bit of a beard and he's got his hair. Then you've got to do Milner, you've got to do whatever. It's really difficult to get all that same style to go all the way across. Yeah. And you'll get 90% of them, but then there'll be two of them. And you're like, I can't, like, it was Dzeko and I can't remember it was. I just couldn't get it likeness right. I got it in the end. And then that sort of kick-started, for me, football illustration. So portraiture got me started in it. But before that, at school, portraiture was always the thing that I felt you got the best acknowledgement from. So if you did a picture of someone, so I remember doing one, and it sounds daft, of like MC Hammer at school. And so,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's MC Hammer. And I remember like thinking everyone knew it was, everyone liked it. And so then that was the thing, then I used to like illustrate my family and stuff like that, just because you get that buzz of them going, yeah, that really looks like your granddad. And I've always had that. And all the way through college and everything, when I was studying, I got a buzz out of it. But it was always like, for me, it was like, it's like a puzzle you've got to solve. And it's kind of like, and I don't do crosswords and stuff, but I imagine that's what it's like for most illustrators. Is you're trying to solve that puzzle. You're trying to get that all the bits in the right place, that jigsaw. And then when you've got it, you're like, yeah, crack that, or that'll do, or, you know, and I love that. And the reason I'm saying that is about the city job is that once I'd done that, I didn't really want to do it again. I didn't particularly like the style. And I wanted to do something different straight away. And that just set me off because, like, and the way I think about it is, I'm just going off on a tangent a little bit, is the way I think it. When I used to do graphic design, if you did a job, a brochure for someone or a website, whatever it was, or a logo, you wouldn't then go to the next client and do exactly the same thing. You'd go, right, well, your brochure is going to actually be red with this, and it's going to have a pictures and photography rather than illustration, and your website's going to have scrolling bits rather than this. And that's the way I think about illustration is what, and that's no, I don't mean any disrespect to anyone who does the same style, because that's some amazing illustrators out there. But my head just thinks of, what else can I do? How can I make this look different? What can I do on the next job? What can, you know, because in graphic design, I won't use the same font all the time. I won't use the same photography. And that's the way my brain thinks from a graphic design point of view in illustration is, what can I do that's different? And the reason I'm saying that is that I did the city stuff and then I didn't do any stuff like that again. So I never went, oh, I've done the city stuff and now I'm, you know, a football illustrator and everyone knows who I am. I didn't. I just left it. I didn't know what to do with it. So I started thinking, well, how else can you illustrate a footballer? And that is, like you say, the body position. So someone like, I don't know who I illustrated first. It might be Theo Walcott or someone like that. And I did it as like a really simplified of them running with a ball, which was nothing like the old illustration style. And that was when social media was just getting going and Arsenal saw it. And then Arsenal got in touch and said, oh, we love it. Can you do more of them? So for a year, I did like the birthdays things for Arsenal, doing different Arsenal footballs in that style. So that developed me another style to work on, but again, I change. But it's always, for me, it's like I say, that puzzle of pulling the things together to get the likeness, to get that player in whatever style it is. And I like going from like an extreme of detail, so nowhere near like Phil's work or like Dave Merrill's work, you know, I can never get there because I'm not good enough, but I'm always trying to take the most detail that I can give down to the, you'll see some of my work is literally like just little figures that are just like legs, arms and a head, you know what I mean? Or the block style where it's just the shape of the face. So I go from like a minimalist all the way to a detail to try and get the likeness throughout that. And that's how you get the work. You know, someone sees it and go, that looks like the player, or that really looks like the way they play. I mean, if you were to illustrate Raheem Sterling, he's got a certain way of running. He's got a certain way of looking. If you were to illustrate, I don't know, Ronaldinho, I mean, you know, how do you illustrate those legs and the way he plays? So for me, it's kind of always got to be, it was interesting what Carl was saying about sort of making the face and flipping it. And you can't do that. You can do it to a point like Carl says, but there are like the eyes will be off or the mouth goes one side, like you say, or the hair and stuff. But I always find the reference images that you take, it's not trying to find, say you're doing a face on portrait, it's not trying to find tons of really good face on portrait, photographs of them. It's trying to find all of those pictures of that person from any angle that makes the character of them. So that then, I remember watching a thing on Stan Chow once and that I was more interested in not what he was illustrating in the center screen, but he had all these images at the side that were all different angles of the person who's illustrating, because you don't get it from one face on. You get it from the character of everything it is. Sorry, I rambled on there. But,
No, it was good. It was good to know. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I was picking up as well that for you, there's not only in the challenge to yourself as an illustrator to develop different looks and different adaptable styles, but also that you are a professional illustrator, and so there's a consideration that it's really good for your portfolio, because you know the way that things work, people see the work that you do and then they would like to work with you on the basis of that. So with working in the football and the sporting area as you do, it's a really good area for the professional illustrator to have a strong area in their portfolio, because commercially, there's nothing wrong in acknowledging that.
Yeah, it can be a great thing to have lots of different ways of approaching a brief, because you get different clients seeing different things and liking it. But in the same way, it can be a challenge, because sometimes I could have created something a couple of years ago, and then they go, "Right, really like that style? Can you do that?" And I'm like, "How did I do that?" You kind of like,
"Oh, really?"
Yes. Like recently for the BBC work I did, they went, "Oh, we like this style. Can you do these things?" And I went, "That's great." And I had to go back into old files and go through the layers and go, "How did I do that watercolor thing again? How did it?" And I had to go back through everything and relearn myself doing it. So daft. Yeah, but it didn't take too long, because you get your head back into it. But it can be a curse sometimes, I don't know.
Phil, can I pick you up on a particular series of work in your portfolio? And it's the line and colour series. It's the portraits, and they have these really fantastic expressive kind of lines and dots and kind of loose patterns as almost a top layer across the individual's portrait that really pulls out certain features or colors of the hair. You've positioned that in the personal work area. And so can you talk us through the importance for you as an illustrator of developing personal work, and what is it about this particular style that had you finish at this area that we can see on your website, and the final style that you got to?
I mean following on from what Dave said there, it's trying to find that kind of breadth of work as well. Now, I mean, I'm a complete Gemini, in so much as a lot of my client work, people ask me to do kind of quite a realistic style of portraiture. They know that I can do make, you know, Ronaldo look like Ronaldo or whatever, and in that painterly style. So often I'll get asked to do quite tight, where there's not so much scope for kind of being expressive or doing something unusual or making it kind of mannerist and elongating the figures or things like that. So I play on those kind of tight briefs. I play with color and expressive brush strokes and try and get texture in there. Otherwise, I think you'd kind of go a little bit, it could be a bit mind-numbing if it was just doing photorealism. Because I like photorealism, but I've never liked doing it as much as the other stuff. So in my personal as Dave says, it's finding that kind of parameters from photorealism right the way through to kind of a couple of brush strokes. And I love experimenting with that. So my personal work is much more simple and expressive and loose. And I hope that every now and then that a client will come along and say, "That's exactly what we want to go across our whole building, this really loose style." And that's what I want. And it doesn't always happen. And I'm really happy doing the realistic stuff, because I still enjoy it. And I like when they piece together, you know, if I'm making it look like a scene or a scenario, I like piecing all the different body shapes and all that kind of stuff like a jigsaw. But for those personal ones, for that line and color series, I'd been looking at, there was an artist I saw on Instagram, and I thought he just does these crazy little brush strokes everywhere. And I was like, that's fantastic. I'd never seen anything like it, and these kind of colors. And I thought, how could I make that my style? You know what I mean? Because I didn't just want to rip off what he was doing, but just make it football related as well. So there's little crosses in there, there's formation shape, there's little their nicknames and stuff. And it was, the original one was actually for These Football Times. It was for the Bielsa one, where he's got El Loco written in his head, and I quite like mixing the graffiti with the realism, and that when you stand back from it, it kind of looks like a normal painting, but the closer you get, there's all this crazy nonsense going on in there.
Well, the reason why that series of work has always stuck in my mind. So I lived in Australia for a time, and so had my eyes opened to Aboriginal culture, and just this amazing depth of kind of art and culture that they have. And when I first saw your portrait in that style, I don't remember what it was, but that has always stuck with me, my eyes saw some of the either repeat line pattern or kind of I'm talking incredibly naively here, but the way that kind of dotted lines are used a lot in Aboriginal art, you know, there's actual meaning behind that, and your kind of expressive, in my eyes, patterns in this series really reminded me of that whole area of visual stuff that I saw over there.
A lot of my work is determined by the kind of programs that I use. I don't use any Photoshop or anything like that. I use programs that try to recreate paint and that you can push with your thumb on the big screen and stuff like this. So a lot of it is kind of mark making, I suppose. And so when I'm off the hook a little bit from a tight brief, that a lot of my work does become little flicks or chunky textures of brushwork that you can build up on the apps and programs. And I think I remember at the time I was doing those, I was painting with my kids quite a bit. And when you're painting with kids, you paint differently than when you're painting because you're kind of keeping it loose and you don't want them to get bogged down with it. And I remember just thinking, this is fun. And so when you kind of get on a screen where you're not bothered about, you know, getting paint all over the dog or the wall and getting in trouble, that you can be that little bit more expressive with it. And I think it was a bit that particular one as well was a little bit of an answer, because I'd come off the back of doing, what was it? Quite a large scale, quite tight piece of work where my eyes were getting fried. And I think I just wanted to see if we could create movement and texture in the face without it, you know, losing form, and see if we can do something like that. And so always like what Dave says, it's, my personal work and the way my brain works, I would love to do more abstract expressive stuff, because that's, especially as I've got older, the art that I appreciate and the art that me and my partner buy for the house is getting way, way more unusual and abstract, and I love it. Whereas before, it used to be very kind of realistic stuff. And so I think my personal kind of feeling towards portraiture is loosening, but my work is getting tighter because that's what people are asking me for. So it's trying to bridge that gap. So, but like, I remember that, I think it was Dave and a few other people said on a previous podcast, that the more you produce your own personal work, it usually tends to get picked up on, and then someone will say, can I have something in that style? And that's where I find it really fun, when I get asked to do something bit more unusual. I love that. So,
well, I'll open this up to any of you, and any of you kind of jump in. Are there times, or have you ever pushed back a wee bit when a client has come to you with a new brief and said, we would really like to use this particular art direction from a previous piece? You know, pushing back doesn't have to mean that you're kind of holding your hands up and saying, no, I'm not doing that. But, you know, there should be nothing wrong in you saying, actually, I think this art direction or this style would be really great for it, or even present them first stage roughs or first stage visuals showing the direction that you yourself would like to take it? Or do you find that it tends to be more specific and saying, can we specifically have that?
She's going to jump in. I'll just jump in quickly then. Just get out.
Sorry, Phil. Sorry, Phil. I should admit, I was actually looking at you on screen as I was saying that.
I must have felt your eyes turning into me
there. Anyone there.
I found that quite often if I've put out some of my personal work or that's a bit more unusual, that I'll get asked specifically for that. Sometimes I've kind of gone back and said maybe a first rough, and I thought this could look a bit better, being a little bit more expressive, or maybe they hadn't thought about making it look like it was actually on canvas, or, you know, just those specifics of it. So, but I think the only time that I've kind of pushed back, it wasn't so much about this style, it was about the structure. And I'm a bit of a stickler because of my art history background on the structure of things. And I was asked to do a big Renaissance scene. You might know it with Totti in there with the boots and everything. Yeah. And it was it was one of my earliest projects, and I was obviously quite nervous about doing it. I'd only switched from being a teacher before and on to get asked by a big company like Nike to kind of do something. And they were lovely. But their original concept was rankling with me. And I spoke to my partner and I said, should I mention to them that what they're asking me isn't actually Renaissance composition? And she was like,
so Phil, yeah, can you
explain us, that?
Yeah, so, I feel like a lesson's coming here. Right,
well, basically, they wanted Totti to be in this position initially, and it was a cool idea. It would have looked wicked. I think someone like Dave Morrell could nail it. Overhanging like a cliff edge with the crowd beneath him, you know, kind of very grand, almost kind of like a dictatorial kind of pose. Borderline kind of propaganda. It was going to be great and it was grand, but then they wanted it in a Renaissance style, and I think there might have been blurred lines of it sounds great, but when you try and do that, there's something in your head, especially if you know that period of art, that would rankle with you, would annoy you. And I thought, this is going out on postcards to people living in Rome. They are going to know these basic fundamental rules of composition and what it is in Renaissance and Baroque art. There's a thing called pyramidal composition, whereby you have a triangle on your work of art, your canvas, and you have your figures basically leading the viewer's eye around this triangle with the main point of interest within the top sphere or top area of the pyramid. It's hard to explain on a podcast, but basically it's a concept, and there is basic rules of kind of thirds within Renaissance art, and it was just annoying me, and my partner was like, well, say something then, if it's really that bugging you. And I thought, it's Nike, it's my first job, I can't. And I did, and I posed it to them, and it was obviously, we only had about a week to do the whole job, and I said, look guys, I'm, you know, and explained it, and they said, well, we understand, and they were perfectly lovely about it, and they said, well, can you just prove us wrong over the weekend and just doodle it and sketch it out?
Yeah.
So I did, and I did the sketch and showed them with the pyramidal composition with it all leading up to the basically Totti's face was the pinnacle of it, and the boots and everything, and when they saw the sketch, they were like, ah, we get it now, brilliant, yeah, okay, do that, right. I was like, thank God. So it gave me a lot of confidence. So anyway, I'm let the other lads chat, yeah. Sorry.
For me, I've got nowhere near the level of client work these two guys got. So I kind of, whenever I get asked to do something, a lot of the times it's kind of a bit of a blank canvas. So they kind of just tell me to a certain extent what they want, but they don't really give me some of the stuff, they haven't really given me a massive direction. I mean, a couple have had given me direction. For example, I did one for the ATP tennis, and that was through Livewire, and they wanted Djokovic on a cloud nine. So it was quite straightforward as to what they wanted. But then I did some work for Uniform Wear's watch, and they just said they wanted something with Leon Edwards, and that was kind of it. They never really because he was the UFC fighter, and they were sponsoring him at his next fight, and they kind of never really gave me massive. They just basically said, you know, kind of do what you want, and then we'll take it from there. So but in terms of kind of pushing anything back, I've never really had anything to a point where I've thought this is not the right direction. I kind of discuss it and I just kind of put something together and say that this is what I've done, and nine times out of ten, they will either maybe slightly correct one or two things, but they normally just go over and say, "Yeah, that's pretty cool."
Yeah, brilliant, fantastic.
Yeah, so for me, because like I said, I've got a few things going on in terms of approaches that clients tend to send me screen grabs of things I've done or things I've done, and say, "We really want it in this style." Some are like flexible in terms of how I approach that style and stuff like that, but I find, depending on the client, is how much I'll bend. So if it's if it was Nike, I go, whatever you want, guy, whatever you want, fellas. If it was some, I'm not going to say any client, but basically it was a lower client, but it was a nice job or whatever. And they said, oh, well, we want you to change this up and do whatever. I go, well, actually, I'm not willing to do that, or this is what you're going to get.
Well, yeah, but also there's, listen, if you're a professional illustrator, you do manage your time, and if a budget is a certain amount, you do have to factor in how much artwork time does that allow for. And there's, you know, that's just another reality. And again, there's nothing wrong in applying that, because otherwise, you know, how would you grow as a professional illustrator yourself?
I mean, I quite often will ask them, do they want a painterly style or do they want a realistic style? Just, if they've not sent me screen grabs, like Dave says, a lot will show you what you want, but what they want. But if they've not done that, then I'll just kind of roughly flesh it out. And then you can also gauge, I suppose, like what Dave's saying, how flexible you could be with it. You know what I mean? Because when you don't want to do something creating, you know, 2-3 days on something that looks awesome to you, and they turn around and go, it's not really what we want. You know what I mean? When we could have established that.
The one thing that puts me off straight away and I decline is when they say, oh, we really like the style you've done, and they sort of start the brief off, and then you might do a first visual, or they might start the process, and then they go, we've seen this other thing we really like, someone else's style or whatever, and can you incorporate some of that? And I'm just like, go and get them. Like, I've had people say stuff like, can you do it like this? And I've gone, well, that's like, is it John Sheenan? Things John like Sheenan. That. And I've said, look, I've said, like, here's John Sheenan's contact details. Yeah. He'll do it for you. You know, why ask, you know, if you want it like that, I'll do it like that. If you want it like other people's stuff that you've seen in your life, go and talk to them. They're really nice guys. Go and talk to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you're actually doing good for the industry of illustrators as well there, you know, because I've come across the same situation as yourself, and, you know, you're actually doing the right thing for another illustrator, and kind of setting ways in letting clients know that, hey, actually, you know what, there's nothing wrong here, but he's actually the right head for this.
Well, I got asked to do one by a client. I won't say it was, because I mean it was grand, and they were loving it, and it worked. But the style they were asking was nothing like what I do. And I thought, I'll have a stab on it. And they didn't show anyone else's work, as if I was, because I would have, like you said, I've said that, you know, I think we're all pretty good at passing work on to other people, whether we're busy or it fits. And then, but it was so unlike, it was all vectory stuff. And I mean, it took me a lot longer doing it than one of my heavily detailed oil paintings, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, why have they asked me?
They obviously saw hidden talents.
And then they were to untap something in his portrait, but it worked. But I wouldn't take on a job like that again.
I know. Once again, this isn't very good content for a podcast, and I do apologise to the listeners. But Carl and Dave, do you not think if Phil was to close the door on the left? And if he wasn't there, if you were to take a snapshot of the wall that's behind him, that could be available as your backdrop on whatever Zoom or meeting like software you're using, because it is very picture. It is very home design. Well, it's just a design studio.
Carl, he's telling us that our houses are rubbish.
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, look at mine. I just have a blank wall behind me. It's more a case.
My partner is going to be over the moon with this conversation. Yeah, I mean, the fact that you're saying that, and there's a massive Millennium Falcon behind me as well. But
that's awesome.
Well, see, this room is, I'm getting kicked out of here soon when my new studio is built, which we're in the process of doing.
Yeah, how is that going?
Because there's been delays, obviously, because of lockdowns and COVID. Materials very hard to come by, and we've had
okay.
Roof is on, but the skylights are wrong, so they need to be changed. And we're getting there, but because we're itching, because the baby is still in with us, and he really needs in this as the nursery. So this lovely thing behind me, full of cool magazines and toys from my childhood and things like that, this will be full of nappies and wipes.
Fantastic. Well, I'm moving myself at the end of this month. So at the moment, I've been doing a lot of working with my laptop and having essentially the TV on while I've been working, as things have been packed away. And I know this is a way changing the topic of what we're talking about, but have any of you seen Mayans MC? You can watch it on the BBC iPlayer at the minute.
No, it's
a follow-up series to Sons of Anarchy. And Phil, with your facial hair, you're looking very much, your look reminded me somewhat of it, because I was watching it a lot yesterday as I was working. It's set after Sons of Anarchy, but it's infinitely better. And just while we're talking about our working environments, I've been sat working with the TV on, which I do a lot of, and try and not get distracted by that. But Dave and Cole, can you give people at home a little bit of an insight to your home working environments? And so do you both, I know in the world we're living in at the moment, people might be working from home more often than not, but do you both typically work from home anyway? And how does that setup work for you? Carl, I'm going to ask you to go first this time.
So I work from home, and the images you see behind me, I mean, there's a few more around. That is literally all I'm allowed in the whole of the house. My partner won't have it anywhere. We've got a two-bedroom flat, and I'm in the second bedroom, which is for my daughter when she comes over and stays at the weekends. And and my son's in with me, but he really kind of, he's 3.5 now. He needs his own bedroom. So I've got kind of, basically, I've got this little corner where I've got a desk, I've got my printer set up, and I've got my artwork on the wall, which I'm allowed. And effectively, that is all I'm allowed in the house. I'm not allowed it anywhere else. I do work from home. That's effectively how I work, from two screens. I've got I have a Wacom screen, and I've got an iPad Pro, which I'm talking to you off right now. I try my best to try and use the iPad Pro, but I just can't get you. I'm a mouse and keyboard person. I can't get used to the stylus and pen yet. And I've tried, and I just, yeah, it's just trying to teach yourself. I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent as well, but
it's good to hear.
This is basically, yeah, my working corner, shall we say, which is, I quite like it. Good lighting. Well, that's the main thing.
Looks like you're making the most of this, of the space you've got, for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Who's so there's a Liverpool calendar, and just on your wall, and I know, again, sorry listeners, this isn't good for you, but who is that? So there's a portrait of Jordan Henderson on there. It doesn't reference the illustrator on the calendar, does it?
It's Yoni.
I was about to say, is that Yoni?
That's his artwork there.
Yeah, we should give him a shout out, actually.
He's a legend.
He is. So it's Yoni, Y-O-N-I, and surname, I think, is W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G. Anyway, Yoni Weinberg or Weiberg.
I think it's Weisberg.
Weisberg, isn't it?
Thank you for that.
Really good. Nice chap as well.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Yes. Great guy. Yes, he is, absolutely. Dave, can you give everybody a little bit of an insight to your environment?
I get moved around a bit, but as a fact, I've got three kids, so I've no spare rooms. So I was originally, when I first started full time illustrating, I was sort of in the end of the kitchen on my desk and sort of working from there, which I was quite happy with, but then I've moved to the front of the house now, so I'm in like the old dining room sort of thing. So I'm not going to turn my screen around because everything is a mess. Like behind me is an old cot, that we're getting rid of. And then I've got like all my kids' Lego and all the paint and stuff behind here. In fact, just one second. This is bad for things, but I'll show you one of the things that are up. Just one second.
Brilliant. So this is Dave just
picking us up.
Oh wow, this is some kind of puppet. Cool.
Oh. That is creepy. Wait, sorry, can't see it. Can I? Look at that.
So oh my goodness.
We went to Prague. Dave. We went to Prague and bought these things. So that's what I have to look at every day.
That's terrifying.
Wow, that is
terrifying, isn't it?
And there's a second one hung up behind you. Is that
don't, right? Don't bring him over. He's cursed.
He's going to walk by himself.
I should have done that. I should have got the kids. But yeah, so I'm kind of... I've been weighing up getting me on studio, but like renting a studio.
So sorry, Dave, just jumping in there, just to describe for people. So they were so they're from Prague, and it's a very creepy looking. I mean, that's a puppet. Is there a more specific? Yeah, like a really old school string controlled puppet, and a very creepy witch from Prague.
Yeah, we just got years ago, and we're still sorting things out. We just had it decorated and stuff, so we're still sorting things out. But they've just been hung up there, and it's like one of those things is you turn around and you realise that they're just fucking down.
Yeah,
kids love them and that. But yeah, no, I get moved around a bit. I've got a biggish desk, which is one of those ones that rise up and down.
I've got one of those.
I've got one of those which helps because you can now again stand up, which is good. I've got a big sort of whack on screen. And then I've got a Mac Pro and things on the other side. But I'm like Carl, I'm very much keyboard and mouse. But the reason I got the Wacom is to do more stuff away from that. So when I'm doing like more freer drawn or painterly styles or anything like that, straight on the Wacom, and I don't let myself get hindered by the key and the mouse. I'm much more looser with it. So
yeah, to do that.
Yeah, it's one of those things. One of the things I found. I'm not trying to give you advice, Carl, honestly, but going from a Vector to the Wacom is to bridge it. So what you do is you do the basis of the work on the Illustrator, and then you take it across as your base. So don't. Yeah. When I try and start off straight into painting or Photoshop and stuff like Phil probably does, I'm not sure. If I don't have a basis, it might be the worst basis ever, like just simple colours or shapes.
Yeah,
I find it easier to go into and then build it up in layers. So that's the way I did it anyway. But
that's kind of what I, when I use my Wacom, I kind of like, so for the hair, for example, it's been one of my biggest problems is to do, you know, to get the texture in people's hair and trying to make it a style. So I do use the Wacom to kind of do the, you know, the layers, the thin hairs and stuff for that. But generally, most of it is mouse and keyboard. It's kind of like, this big old Wacom tablet, and I'm just drawing hair on it at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, I don't use mouse and keyboard at all. Well, not in any of my work. Wow.
That's it.
No, I've got a Surface Studio 2, the big touchscreen one that folds down like a Wacom tablet, but I use art programs, which is all stylus based, and I've got an iPad Pro, which I'm not a massive fan of drawing on. I don't like drawing on it as much as my normal one. But it has come into its own. There's certain things that kind of Procreate and a few other apps can do that the one I use on the Microsoft one can't do. So if you need any kind of flourishes or neon lights or anything like that, you can do it very quickly on that. So, but mainly it's there so I can watch Netflix at like 3 a.m. while I'm working on a brief and with my headphones in so the kids are asleep.
Bill, you have product tested and worked with Microsoft in the past.
Yes.
Am I right in thinking that? So you
have, full disclaimer, they very kindly gave me this Surface Studio 2. Oh. So if I'm being completely honest. But no, I used to work quite a bit with Microsoft. And they were the ones that gave me my break. They when Nokia were bought by them, they spotted my portraiture and finger paintings on a phablet phone.
Okay.
Nokia. And so Microsoft got me involved in adverts and kind of viral campaigns and kind of championed me. And I, in return, initially, you know, was doing reviews for them. And yeah, they've really supported me throughout it, really. We've been a bit quiet on each other because I've just been kind of so busy with my football stuff. And I suppose, you know, I reckon they're quite busy, Microsoft. You know. But they're a really nice team. They're lovely. And they very kindly, I worked with this particular computer. I'd never been able to. I was saving up for one, let's say. It was a couple of years. And it was my dream thing. I had a small little Surface Studio, Surface tablet before it, which was perfectly fine. But as I was working on bigger commissions and more faces and more things to draw that it was just getting a bit small and tight. And so I did the product launch for this computer and did the press briefing where I had to speak to who were like from trusted reviews and all the magazines, and they got me in there to kind of be the artist who uses it. But I found that I was kind of doing quite a lot of chatting, and they were lovely people and met lots of really cool people that day, and they very kindly gifted me one to work with. So very fortunate. There we are. Lovely. It's a lovely thing to work on. I love it.
If they are listening, I'll have one.
Yes, it's just such, I mean, if I lean forward now again, you won't see this, but the action of just leaning it and then tilting it back is just, it's fantastic. I love it. So lovely, and that's stuff. And that's that. So yeah, but I'll be out of this room, as like the other guy led saying, into my, can't wait for a new studio soon.
Fantastic, fabulous. And for anybody listening who has been considering trying a standing desk, or one of the desks whose height you can adjust to be seated at or stood at, I am a big advocate of standing desks, or at least mixing up your time between standing and sitting. And with the knocks and constant injuries from being a keeper, standing up for more often than not during the day when I'm working does help a lot. And I think anyone who tends to find that they've get some form of aches or kind of constant uncomfortableness from seating, I would recommend trying a standing desk for sure, because I think it helps me a lot during the day.
If you watched a graph of how I've used my desk, it would be a lot, not so much. When was the last time you've used it? Literally, that's how I work with it.
I just used it then before just to check the height of the camera for this call, and then realised, I've messed up my height, that I'd got it perfect for my working, because my office chair is so comfy that I very rarely stand up. And when I move to the new studio, my new room, we're changing this. I'm giving this to a friend, selling it to them, and I'm going old school. I'm going to be getting some kind of big Don Draper thing.
Oh, nice.
You have got to do a photo with like a glass of whiskey in it. And your pen exactly. In your hand. Yeah,
so that's what I'm going for.
I remember seeing an article online some time ago, and it did speak to kind of dietitian and medical experts who broke down if Don Draper had actually, you know, if John Hamm was actually drinking that amount and smoking that amount during the day, how long Don Draper would actually have lived. So yeah, Phil, have the decoration of him, but please look after yourself.
He's an absolute hero of mine. So
because I love that series, Mad Men. But I felt they actually showed that really well in the series.
Yeah, me too.
Because there were certain characters who would like be in a room and they'd wet themselves and stuff and things like that. And they'd like, because they were just showing that if you drink that much and smoke that much, you will be a mess. And they kind of showed that.
Especially,
really well.
I think not only did I enjoy it as a good series and stuff, but considering what we all do, it was a really good insight into the kind of golden age of this period where the fees they were charging, the fees they were commanding was just off the chart when you look back.
What they were able to do,
the power they had, and it really shows how it's changed. But what I found when I was watching, when I was working, was that not only does it show how the world has changed, but in a way how the importance of visual design is still so key. You know what I mean? Just that maybe things, because there's so many avenues, it's not just a billboard or a magazine, there's so many ways to get your artwork seen now that it's kind of diluted it a little bit, and there's so many more people doing it. And I just thought it was a fantastic series.
I remember watching the bits I used to like. Sorry, we've gone really off on tangent.
Really off the bits.
No, you know what, let's just indulge ourselves for a couple of minutes here.
Was the presentation. So they build the stuff about the ideas, and they build it, and then they present it, but they present it to those people and move those people to their way of thinking. And I watched, I don't know if you watch Abstract series on Netflix, yes. which is amazing, yes. but there's a yeah. Paula Scher one. And she, Paula Scher, who works for what they called Pentagram in New York and stuff. And she describes how a meeting is. And it's so true. She says that she shows this sort of graph, and she shows that when you present something, you'll go up like that because you're getting them all excited about it and stuff. And you'll reach this point, and that's really high, where they'll be excited about it. But then someone will go, yeah, but what about? And you'll come down a bit, but then you'll counteract and go back up. And that'll be your highest point that you'll ever get with them, yeah. them loving it. And then someone will say something else and you start to come back down, and you'll only ever get back up to like halfway. And she says, and that's when you end the meeting, because you don't want to go anywhere. But it was, that reminds me of like Don Draper, and that is, you've got to get them excited about it, get them to love it, and then go, right, I just love the idea of...
I think I'd like more of that kind of with, you know, it would be, look, obviously I'm missing that kind of face-to-face stuff at the moment, but it would be quite cool if you kind of, to be able to pitch stuff. I don't know whether I've not really had too much opportunity. I mean, I don't, Marcus, you might have with like UEFA and stuff like that, to kind of, to go and sell a story of your work, you know what I mean? Because like Don Draper's Carousel thing for the...
Ah, yes, lives. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so beautifully put forward about this family moments, and I'd love to get the opportunity to talk like that to clients. You know what I mean?
That's what I used to do, or as a design, as a graphic designer, and the sort of high up you got in the graphic design agency, you would become the presenter of your work.
Right.
And I used to do that like 3 times a week. And it at first it was the most worst thing to ever do, because you're just panicking about what you think. But then the more you did it, the more you understood how clients work and what you needed to show. And the old thing of in your portfolio, you should have some good work, some poor work, and then with something really good and stuff like that. It was all like that when you presented designs. It was kind of like building them up and then guiding them on where it should go. And like you said before about, you know, this could be used in different media and stuff like that. It was I had to leave it because I wanted to do Football Illustration. But I do miss, like you say, going in the room and having that buzz, because the buzz you get from a client going, we love it, we want to go with that. It's a proper high when you come out. Yeah.
Well, the indulgence of talking about Mad Men has actually come back as if all of this is scripted and we've created a narrative here and it's built to this point in itself. But it is a very good point to speak about, and there's nothing wrong to be reminded of the basics of presenting your work in the best way that it can be, or to at least not let your work down by the way that you present it. And I have heard from more than one art director that I work with at super super fab publications to work with, and I hear about illustrators or any kind of creative or image maker that they're working with, not everybody sends work on to get reviewed or approved with what I think is the simple couple of paragraphs that I write to give the work context and to talk around it. But going back on how this has just come back on talking about presenting your work, it's good to just remind yourself that even in an email, you can do what you can do, and it's important to do what you can do when presenting work. You know, even if it's first stage roughs, if you're contacting new people that you'd love to work with and you've got a PDF of work, or you're sending on final art, you know, it can be built up to this big, beautiful, iconic TV moment, as that carousel presentation was, or it can be getting in touch with an art director for the first time, or sending on first stage roughs to get your route approved for a new piece of work. You know, there's always importance in any presentation of your work.
I agree.
Sorry, I just enormously went off on one of myself then. I'm not sure how long I
just feel really bad, because I just screen grab stuff and whack it on an email, so I'm really bad.
On some I do that, but I think on other ones, like you're saying, if you're trying to create a vibe or a kind of to tell a story, maybe I like with just keeping it on kind of topic, I suppose, on portraiture and kind of with these football times for working with Omar for the Valencia cover, it was kind of like that was an open brief of how to achieve the cover. But I kind of took him on a bit of a journey of kind of Art Nouveau and an article, J.C. Leyendecker, and all these kind of stuff. And it was all about the aesthetics and the kind of flow and the telling the story of the city. And by the end of the email, came back and he just went, I love it. And I was like, that's it. We've got it. You know what I mean? And so, and I think you have to, it was more for me, I suppose, in a way, because it was the way my thought process. I just thought, I'll get that down in an email. And it worked. You know, I think some people, when you, I suppose, with my background in art, that there's some art that you look at which is just cool straight away. You just look at it and go, that's unbelievable, either as a technical standpoint or, you know, because it's just so hard to do or whatever it might be, or it's just a cool image. And then there's other stuff that makes you maybe think a little bit more. And I think I'm seeing more and more football art, which is doing that, whether it's telling a little story or it's got some history or pedigree. Yeah. So there's the Ruben lad who does a lot of the stuff with Arsenal.
Ruben Dangor,
yeah. And there's all the, I mean, it's not only is it very
cool, but creative,
very creative stuff. And I think there's a lot more to football art than I think, you know, my partner's mom still don't think kind of gets what I do for a job.
Who does? If you make money from that, you know,
it's like the old mother-in-law thing. But I genuinely, she loves what I do in so much as, well, wow, that's very nice. But I think, you know, people don't quite realise how diverse the football world is, football art world is, and there's so many people creating so many different styles that there is room for storytellers as well as just like, oh, that's really cool. You know what I mean? So, I mean, all four of us here have got completely different styles, and I would never be able to do each of your styles in a million years, and yet we all have a place. There's no way I could do yours.
I could do Phil's, but I've got to go to Florence for a year.
Can I come back with you?
I'm just going to go to Florence.
There is a question I've wanted to put to each of you, and this may be putting each of you on the spot, but it'd be interesting to learn from each of you what comes to mind when I ask the most difficult or any certain part of any particular portrait that you found trickiest to capture, either with a certain part of a likeness or a certain head shape, or there was a certain element of a portrait that you particularly found most difficult?
Cole's stepping up.
Look at this.
I'll step up. For me, is I think if you capture the eyes, you've got the portrait. On my perspective, if you can get the eyes right.
Sorry to jump in. Do you start there? Do you tend to start there when working on a new portrait?
It's really funny because sometimes I work differently every time. So sometimes I'll do the nose and the mouth first and the head shape, and then I'll do the eyes last, or sometimes I'll do the eyes first. It just depends on, I just kind of just go with the flow and however I work it around. I do generally do the head shape first, and then I start to do the hair, and then I do the shadows. But when I get to sort of the facial features, it could go in any order. But I tend to find that if you can nail the eyes, I just think that the eyes are key to everything. Because when you look at somebody, you look at them in the eyes. And if you can recognize the eyes, then your 75% of the portrait is done, for me anyway, in my particular style anyhow.
Fab. Thank you, Carl. Is there any particular portrait that you found really challenging when it came to the eyes, or any particular person's eyes that you found a challenge to get right for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny enough to say that, because I've just opened up like sort of my personal commissions for people. So I've been illustrating, you know, a few personal images, and this guy recently sent through some images of his kids that he wanted to be alongside the footballers and stuff, and he had a son and a daughter. And I'd done the sun first, and instantly, straight away, I knew I'd nailed it. Like, you know, one go was perfect. And then I went to illustrate the daughter, and I'm not joking. I'm like, how have I managed to just nail the first one spot on the second one? Second go, a third go. And yeah, it just, each person is different. I find, like, I had initially, I think he's all right now, I've nailed it, but James Milner, I found really hard to illustrate. And Jordan Henderson, I found particularly hard to illustrate. Just, I tend to try, what I try to do every year is illustrate a person and illustrate them again and try and make them better than I did last year and the year before that. And, and try and that's go over the faces. And I find that, well, like I said, with Henderson, now if I look back at the portraits of Jordan Henderson I've done over the years, and look at everyone, I'm like, I still to this day, I think maybe one I've done where I think, yeah, it looks like him. And everyone else says, yeah, it looks great. But just, you know, in your own, and I don't know whether that's because I stare, you can stare at something too much where you can look at it for too long. And then all of a sudden it starts to not look like what you initially thought it looked like. So, but yeah, there are definitely a few people that can take a few goes, but like I said, yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell you on that point, excuse me, unless it's a piece of editorial work that will have, you know, a very much a set kind of time-ish and day deadline. That's actually why I tend to not send clients new work at the end of the day, because I always like to then give something a fresh set of eyes in the morning. And it could just be it takes another 30 minutes of artwork time, and there'll be something that my eyes didn't see or didn't notice that needed to be corrected or slightly reworked or to be added on. But no, I absolutely get your point when it comes to that.
For sure. There was a thing a lot of people tend to do, especially with artwork that's not symmetrical, is they like to flip the canvas. Now, that's something I only sort of found out more recently that people do. And I was unaware, what do you mean flip the canvas? Okay. And sometimes when you flip it, it doesn't look like, even though you've done a mirror effect, it doesn't look like it does. And it's really weird. It's really weird.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because there are times when, you know, sometimes I can be quite into a piece, but the composition itself I'm still quite open to being flexible with, and so there can be times when, you know, a large part of the composition is an angular view of a building cropped in from a corner, and if I just grab that object and flip it and put it on the other side, it just absolutely does not work.
So I found
that can even be just from individual elements and objects in a composition.
Definitely. It's a bizarre one. Since I've started doing it, I've had to stop doing it, because I'm like, you're just driving yourself mad. If you're happy with how it looks first time, don't flip it, just leave it as it is, you know?
Yeah, just take a break from the screen.
Agreed.
Dave, what about yourself and when it comes to a real challenge of a portrait?
I think over the years you learn all the skills. I mean, doing it for 10 years or whatever, I think you learn all the skills to find your way back to how you can get it right. And I think I struggle. I was just writing some stuff down there while Carl was talking. I was thinking, what do I, you know, find difficult? And it, sometimes it can be to do with the face shapes and stuff. Sometimes it can be like a jawline, especially. Because I've been illustrating more female footballers and things for different, not a lot, but like you get the, because female football, women's football has gone to such a scale now that you are getting those commissions in, which is great.
Yeah.
But it is harder to illustrate for me a female footballer than a male footballer. Okay. And the reason can be is that men have stubble, or men have strong eyebrows, or men have jaw lines, and they're very recognizable. It sounds really weird, but when I illustrate a female footballer, there's certain things that you grab onto when it's a bloke. So it's got the, you know, you could do a, you know, the beard, or you can do the bigger nostril with the, because it's a female footballer, you've not got those things to start the basis off as well. And you've got to, sometimes you can go too masculine with it, so that and sometimes you can go too, I've been told sometimes I've gone too feminine with it, where they don't look like footballers, and I've I think that's where, and two things I do. And one is like you say, is you go away, you come back, and straight away you go, well, that's not right. You know, yeah. You see it straight away. And if you're not seeing it, there's two things that I do. If I'm still not seeing it, is my wife. And first of all, she always says about the jawline. That's the reason I said jawline. My wife will go, the jawline's not right. You've got to do it. And then I'll go, keep moving it, going, is that right? And she'll go, no. And I'll keep it. She can't tell me what is right and how to make it right, but she'll tell me when it is right. So it's really frustrating. Yeah. She's like, no, just tell me what you need me to do. You know, you're looking at your wife. And she's like, well, I don't know what you need to do. I just tell you when it's right. Yeah. But, and the other thing to do is, like I said before, when you're working from reference images, is if it's really not working, get another reference image, because you'll see something, or you'll see it'll be just a shadow or a shape or something, and the different reference image of that in person will go, actually, their nose hasn't got that mark, that shape to it, or their eyes are actually small, or whatever it is, or it can be a head. You know, these guys will know, and you'll know that when you do a portrait, it can literally be changing one element. The weirdest, it could be anything. It could be an ear. It could be like a hairline. But once you change, you go, oh, it's him. And like, you couldn't get it before. You try and you change one thing, or you delete thing. You're like, well, that's perfect, but just that bit's wrong. And it's the weirdest thing, getting a likeness. It's bizarre.
Well, it's the, when I do portraits, because of the kind of angular view that I like to take, because they tend to be more abstract and minimal portraits anyway, it's the facial shape that I tend to work on. So if you consider looking at someone whose kind of head is kind of 45 degrees facing you, so you get to see slightly the other side of them, so the way that cheekbone on the other side of their face is just touching into view, and then how the cheekbone on this side, the kind of foreground shadow works with that. So it's always that, it's funny you say the specifically the jawline, because that would be,
because the face my shape as much as anything,
my consideration. But for me, it tends to be, where yours is specifically the jawline, mine can tend to be kind of essentially the cheekbone, really, and what you're seeing on that far side of the head.
If you have photographs taken of you, so you look at photographs that you've been to a wedding or something, you look at photos and you think, that does not look like me, or that's me but I look fat, or that's me but my eyes are closed. That's how photographs, reference images, can be so different. I think that's the reason as well, is that the reason that we are football illustrators as well is because we are interested in football. And we know what Messi looks like. We know what Ronaldo looks like. We've watched him how many times on the screen being interviewed or playing or whatever. So we'll never choose those reference photos where they don't look anything like them. And it's the reference images that you go, that looks like him. You know, and when they play football as well, you'll know that they'll ask you to illustrate a certain footballer. I think Jack Wilshere is an example, right? And if you go on wherever you go, Google, and you look for images of Jack Wilshere playing football, he plays with his tongue out the whole game. I'm not kidding. You'll never notice that when you're watching him play, but every photo of him, he has his tongue on it. Well, the client doesn't want his tongue hanging out. It's just a stupid thing, but like, until you get that, you can't get the likeness right and stuff. It's a really bizarre
thing. It's funny where your eye goes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Phil. Phil, as you're just adjusting yourself there, well timed.
I was just with the glasses there, which is getting used to working with glasses was another thing. But
is that new for you working?
It's not actually relatively new, but it is a bit of a change, and it's massively helped. I was getting lots of headaches and dead tired, and so I've had them quite a while now. But it took a bit of adjustment at first, but.
Do you wear your glasses, Dave? Sorry, Phil. Dave, do you wear your glasses when you're working all the time?
Sometimes I'm a bit weird. I'm weird. My eyes have, during COVID, I've just not had an eye test in like 3 years. And like, I need them for reading and things, but I definitely, there's something going wrong, because sometimes I need them and sometimes I don't. So I don't know what it is. But like for this, I like to wear them for Zoom calls and stuff, so I can actually see what's going on. But like sometimes. It's the weirdest thing.
I've started with, I said to the optician, I said, can I just wear them all the time if it helps? And he said, yeah, go for it. And game changer for me, because I was getting really tired. And I think one of my eyes is slightly boss-eyed, like slightly kind of, and so it was always working to kind of come back and making me tired when I was, especially on a screen.
Oh wow!
So yeah, just, so I've been
just jumping in. Sorry, I've had laser eye surgery.
Oh, have you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I still wear glasses. So I mean, obviously I haven't got them on now. I just wear them. This eye, both eyes. This eye's still really good. I had it about 10 years ago, I think. And this eye has really started to go back to how it was before. So I do wear glasses, tend to be when I'm driving. And
we're just showing our age here, boys.
Yeah, when I look
like,
at
I'm 40 you know, now. It's like I'm falling apart. So
yeah, that's me at the end of this year. As well.
But, how old are you, Marcus?
How old am I? I am. Hang on a second. I am.
I'm trying to work out if I'm the oldest. That's all I'm trying to do.
This is probably for about 3-4 years. I've had to do this now. I'm 39 this year. Yes, I'm 39 this month. In fact, in 8 days' time, I've actually genuinely just noticed that it's 8 days' time.
I'm the oldest. I'm 44. Just to, that's
you look so well. So
you don't look a day over 28.
Listening to the other lads,
yeah,
many similarities from what Carl was saying initially about starting with the eyes and getting the eyes right. I went from when I'm drawing with pen and pencil, I'll always start with the eyes, and I suppose I kind of break all the rules of, you know, people put the lines of where the guy to the top of the head should be and the line down the middle. When I'm drawing with a pen, I just start with the eyes and work it out as I'm kind of going along. And I think if you get the eyes right, particularly with kind of my style as well, that if you get that little glint of a player, and like you said, like we know the players, we know what they look like. So you kind of, if you can convey that through their eyes, that's a big help. In terms of struggles, again, much the same. I was asked to do a lot of the Women's World Cup stuff, and that was the first time doing female footballers. And some my paint style is all about texture and paint, and the last thing you want to convey on a woman's face or a lady is too much texture, because it would be either unflattering, or it would be like Dave said, too chiseled, or it's so there's you know, I kind of looked back on how artists that I really like from kind of, you know, art history. So I'm big into Baroque, kind of Caravaggio and people like that. And so I looked at the kind of different techniques of how I would apply their techniques in. And there's a thing called sfumato, where it's very smoky brush strokes. And so I basically worked out on my program, how could I smooth the brush strokes so it still looked like my style, it still looked like me, but you'd get that kind of delicate nature to the skin. Yeah. And so it kind of works, and it did work, and so it was a struggle, because getting likenesses with the women's was tough as well, because I didn't know the players quite as well. Yeah. I was seeing them for the first time, but again, I think I was very conscious of trying to get it so bang on first time, and I was worried about them being offended, and you know, I think also because I knew on the Women's World Cup that they were seeing the work, they were kind of saying okay to it as well. And I was conscious of that.
Yeah.
You know, when I do a picture of a lot of players, quite often they, you know, I hope they see it, but they might not. And but in this one instance, I knew they were. So I really wanted to kind of get it right. So I learned a lot from that. But it's funny though, although we know players and we've all spoken about that when you recognize Messi is Messi, we know when we've looked at a reference photo and that doesn't look right, or if we're doing something. And I do, like Carl says, I'll often take photos of the screen and holding up to a mirror to see if it looks pear-shaped in the mirror of what I see in the phone. And I'll use that technique sometimes, and you can work out actually that needs to be turned or elongated a little bit. But one of the most recognizable faces, you know, on the planet is Cristiano Ronaldo, and I hate painting him. With a passion.
Oh, really?
He is a nightmare. He has all the right parts of a beautiful man, but all wrong together. And you know what I mean? He's perfect little bits, but I have a lot of sympathy for that sculptor who made it look like the head from Art Attack.
You know what? Now that you say that, it might be Kevin McGiven, or I might be making that up in my head. I'm sure I've spoken to another illustrator.
I think it might be Kev, actually. Yeah.
Who does a lot of football work, that said there was something about Cristiano Ronaldo's face that he found, and he couldn't quite explain why, that he found that a particular challenge to get to a stage everything where he was happy with it.
Exactly. I've done him a few times now in different ways. So I've done the mocking him up as a teacher for Bleacher Report, and I've done him straight up in just a kit. I've done loads of different ones, and each one I've not been happy with. And whether, I mean, he's got an enormous kind of Nick Faldo-esque neck, which is just ridiculously big for the size, and then small features. And it kind of, when you think of Ronaldo, and, you know, loads of, you know, ladies love him, and he's very, seen to be kind of a sex symbol. But when you actually look at all the little individual bits on his face, it's like, that doesn't work. It's like a photo fit from Crime Watch. It just doesn't work.
Mental. We'll go back to those photos of when he very first signed for United, and he had that coloured striped jumper.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
and he had that really gelled, curly, curtained hair.
He probably looked better then. I reckon he was probably easier to draw then.
Probably
the chiseled look
to focus on, yeah.
So that's where I kind of struggle with a little bit. But often, like you say, you kind of go away, and I do use the partner technique. I'll get my partner in, and she'll come and have a little look and just go, you know. And she's an art historian as well, so she'll often kind of go, well, and she's quite good at drawing as well and painting. She'll just kind of go, I just need something like that, and yeah.
Yeah.
I don't let her touch the screen or anything. You know?
Just point in air. Brilliant. Well, fabulous, gentlemen. Well, actually, each of you, when are you next playing football? Do any of you play football often yourselves?
Yep, I play on Mondays, every Monday, from 9 to 10 o'clock. So I can't get in trouble from the missus for saying, you know, you've got to put the little one to bed. I'm like, he's in bed, so I'm off.
Yeah. How was Monday's game?
It was good. It was really good, actually. We won. I think it was 5-2 or something like that. And I've just bought the new Liverpool. Just give me 1 second. I'll show you.
Oh, I think we're about to be showing a new Liverpool shirt here. It was bound to happen, Dave, as we were outnumbered.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't really like to wear.
I remember you saying on our chat, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to wear football kits, but I don't mind the training gear. I love to buy the training gear. So I've just got a new training gear that arrived there. Unfortunately, after Monday this week, so I was getting a little bit excited. So I'll wear that this coming Monday. So
yeah. How about yourself, Dave? When are you next putting on your boots, if you know?
I play Friday nights, but it's just like 9v9, 10v10, yeah. And it's just a group of lads that know each other. So it's just, nice. Yeah, there's no way. My amateur days are over.
Yeah,
44, isn't it? You've not got the legs anymore.
how did you get on last Friday?
Last Friday, we won and I scored a belter, and I don't score many. I don't score.
Tell us, you know, as a visual man, give us a picture in our heads of your goal.
I play in defence, and the ball went, for some reason I ended up on the edge of the box, and the ball went across, and I just shouted, drag it, I can't remember what it was like, drag it back or whatever, and the player looked up, knocked it to me, and I had the whole goal to look at, and I'd sort of hit it, and it curled top corner, and that for me is like, I go on with a smile on my face because I'm a defender, and once you do it, it's like when, you know, when Vincent Kompany hit that one against Leicester. It's a bit like that. You're not supposed to do it. You're not. You weren't expected to do it, but you're really happy with yourself that you scorched one. That was it. Yeah, that's because it gets for me nowadays.
Top man, good for you, Phil. What about you?
I play on a Monday night as well for a sevens team in league. So yeah, it's reasonably competitive. And I'm a defender as well. And we sometimes did play on Tuesday night in the higher league. But got absolutely battered every week.
Really?
I mean, these guys were like, you know, ex-crew players. They're in the group. Some of them played for Chester, some of them played for 1874 Northwich. And I spoke to one of them, and they also had about 20 odd players, and we were rotating it. And I said to one of them at the front, and there was eight of us, and we had one substitute. And I said, like, how old, like, what's your average age? And they were like, I don't know, about 18. I'm 40, mate. How am I meant to say? So I just gave him a few yards. You see, I did the Jan Molby trick of just stepping off him a little bit and playing the mind games with him. And I don't score many. I'm like Dave, but every now and then I'll hit a pearl or something like that. But I didn't play this week because I was at Anfield. So.
Oh, you were?
For the game?
I went for the friendly, yeah. So.
See, I can't play this week because I'm going to the Brentford Arsenal game tomorrow. So I'm going to London.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to London.
Oh, wow.
That'd be good.
Of course, Dave. Yeah, be so.
You were at Brentford, yeah.
Just letting the listeners know that, Dave, you do a lot of work with Brentford and have for a number of seasons. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got. And I'm working with them again this season. So I think I'm doing most of the covers this season. So I'm going for a meeting with them tomorrow and then a bit of a tour of the stadium. And then I got a ticket for the game. But the only thing is, like, I'm not a London boy. So it's like I'm going to a Brentford Arsenal game on my own, 8 o'clock at night. I've no idea where I'm going to be. I'm just going to, like, stood there with a ticket. I'll probably get mugged, beaten up.
You'll be all right. You'll be
I'll ring Carl. I'll be like, Carl, where am I going?
Give me a shout. It's like literally 20 minutes from my house.
Is it?
I'm not going to be here, unfortunately. I'm going to be at the in-laws. But it's... Brentford's nice. You'll be all right, man. And I drive past the new stadium a lot, and it's been a shame that they've not been, you know, they had the whole of last season because obviously the lockdown and you know, football and stuff. It's just driving past it, but it's really nice. It looks really nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The other thing is the COVID thing, because like I've got all excited about going to the game, and then I remembered, we're in a pandemic, and I'm in the stadium, and I'm like, oh. Anyway, so.
Pack your mask. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I actually have another game today, and kickoff is in an hour and 26 minutes. I know what shirt I'm wearing today.
And, you've been warming up, haven't you? You've been doing stretching. Yeah.
Well, listen, while I'm stood up here, my standing desk. So I've got my calf stretches that I can do while I'm stood up, which is just leaning back on your calf. So I've been doing those just gently and slowly.
See, I've been going away. Carl, you mentioned before about midlife crisis with your hair and stuff like that. See, I went out and bought a new mountain bike and all the gear. Didn't just go with a bike, just everything. And so I've been hitting the local trails around here, which are ridiculously overgrown. Don't know what I'm doing, flying down tracks. Brilliant. Absolutely loving life.
Awesome. Happy days. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today. It has been super insightful to learn about how portraiture and sporting portraiture is a part of your lives as professional illustrators and how you each approach that individually. And all I can say to the listeners is go and find these three individuals online. There are episodes when we speak to each of them individually as well, so please do visit each to find out more about Carl, Dave and Phil. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gents.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.